noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon in the city of Chicago, another beautiful summer day in Chicago. I don't know if you were listening to David Miranda in the WGN News. He did that story about Car2Go, which is just starting in Chicago. Frank Senek is going to talk with us about that a little bit later in the program. Frank from Cranes, of course. And then I gave that statistic about rental properties and about how if you make the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, which I think I don't have my notes now, but I think it's like 7 1/4 in this country. There is nowhere in the country where you can afford on a 40-hour work week to rent a 2-bedroom apartment, an average apartment. There's just that sort of disparity. We'll talk to Elise Glink about that in a minute or two, too, or I should say in the second half hour. Right now on the program is Terry Savage, a personal finance expert, and you, of course, can read her columns at terrysavage.com. And if you go there today, she will explain to you why the economy is like a squishy toy.
That's my latest column.
Welcome.
I've always, I've thought of that for many years. And now I watch my granddaughters playing. Squishy toys are all the rage. It's ridiculous. They're probably made in China and going to be subject to tariffs any minute because they're expensive already.
Since you brought up your granddaughters, can we say what you're doing this week?
I am babysitting my granddaughters for the whole week while they go to day camp on the lake. So I am getting up early and doing laundry all the day long and making breakfast and trekking them off and making dinner. How did I do this when I was younger?
It's easier when you're grandma, I think. Or is it harder?
No, I got this feel it's harder.
Okay, so about 15 minutes from now, representatives from the EU are going to go to the White House. They're going to meet with President Trump, and they're going to talk about this sort of the tariff kerfuffle that's going on. President Trump's coming to Illinois tomorrow. He's going to go down to a U.S. steel factory in Granite City, and they say they're adding workers, they're adding production because the tariffs have helped when it comes to U.S. steel and aluminum production.
You know, that's just going to show you the real great value of public relations and setups, because right down there, if he walks outside the factory, he'll find some cornfields and some soybean fields where prices have fallen dramatically because the Chinese are, that's our biggest export in Illinois, not steel, because prices have fallen dramatically because the Chinese are now buying their soybeans through Brazil. It's ridiculous. Even General Motors. You want to talk steel and industry? General Motors stock has dropped today, as you heard Orion say in the news part, in part because the cost of everything that they use, the materials, has gone up. So the profits are being squeezed. That's happening all around the country. Whirlpool said the same thing a couple of days ago. They import steel to make washing machines, and the cost of everything. Take a look at home sales this morning. Take a look at new home sales. Earlier this week, we had existing home sales declining. But I talked to a home builder who said, oh, my goodness, the cost of everything. Forget China. How about having a trade war with Canada, and the cost of the wood things, the plywood and other things, has gone up dramatically.
I want to do home sales. I want to get to home sales a little bit later, but I want
I'm just saying these tariffs are being felt all over and not in the way that was originally designed. And that is the point about my column about the squishy toys, just to go back to explain why that, is that if you squeeze because you're going to say we're going to protect American industry, we're going to squeeze out these foreign goods, you're going to have a dramatic bulge somewhere else. And what you're having is a bulge in cost for everybody. Just wait, everybody, till Mexico retaliates and you can't get lettuce in winter.
But right now I feel like it's something we're reading about. I mean, if you're a farmer, you're feeling it. You know, and as you said, General Motors was the highest profile company yet to say their forecasts are going to be impacted by this. But if you're working in this building or if you're working in Chicago and going to Walmart or Jewel or Mariano's.
Don't say that. Because you're working in our building, WGN Studios, we get paid for talking about it, and it gives us something to talk about, so we'll be okay. But if you walk into Walmart and expect to see low-priced towels and low-priced gym shoes and low-priced everything plastic that we import from China, think again.
But here's that's the question I'm getting at, Terry. Are those prices, I won't see those today, right? I might see those next week, 2 weeks, or a month from now, but we're not seeing, the average person isn't really feeling the impact today yet.
No, not yet. Okay. But workers at factories are beginning to see a slowdown because car parts, things that are imported, not only from China, but across the North American free trade zone, all of those things are being impacted, and particularly lumber for home builders. And so anybody who goes out to buy a home is today seeing the impact, the cost of products that are used to build homes going up. So just because we don't feel it yet, it's like putting the frog in the pot of water and turning up the
I know,
heat.
But I just
at
wanted...
what point do you start? Does he start jumping out?
Well, I guess my point is
up.
My point I'm trying to make is that if you are out there and are not feeling it yet, it doesn't mean that it's not going to impact you. It's going to.
Oh, it's going to impact all of us.
That's
and it's going to impact interest rates. It's going to because rising prices is what we commonly define as inflation, though I think it's a monetary phenomenon. And anybody who wants to lend dollars, you know, in other words, you and me as savers buying, lending money to the government by buying treasury bills, but the smart money, not just you and me and all of us, but the real smart money is going to say, wait a minute, if prices are going up, it means my dollar doesn't go as far buying things. That's inflation. I'm not lending you money at 0.7% or even at 2% if inflation is going to rise at 3% or maybe 4%. I'm going to demand higher interest rates when I invest my dollars. And so you're going to see, forget the Fed raising rates a quarter of a point. You're going to see the market saying, wait, we're not going to lend the U.S. government money, i.e. buy treasury bills, notes, and bonds at these low rates. If the value of the dollar is declining, i.e. it buys less because the cost of imports is so much more expensive. So I demand higher interest rates. And you know what? The U.S. has to finance a $20 trillion deficit. This week we're selling, I think it's $36 billion of five-year treasury notes and $16 billion of two-year treasury notes to replace old maturing IOUs. And we're going to have to pay a higher interest rate if the world perceives that the dollar buys less and the dollar does buy less when prices go up.
All right, that's Terry Savage. You can read about that at terrysavage.com. We're going to take a break, and then after that, we're going to go shopping for houses.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to the Allstate Showcase Studio, the Skyline Studio, as we say hello again to Terry Savage. And Terry, so the new home sales were out, the figures out today, down 5.3% from May, just up 2.4% from year-over-year numbers. A little disappointing there.
It's very disappointing, and the question is, what is it telling us? Is it telling us that higher mortgage rates are deterring people? Is it telling us that incomes that aren't keeping up with higher prices are deterring people from being able to afford homes? You talked about the rental index, but the same thing as home prices rise. And are those home prices rising because of things like the cost? I mean, why would? I mean, it shouldn't cost any more to build a home this year than last year, except maybe the 2% inflation we had. But we're seeing home prices rise faster because a lot of the components are actually imported. So perhaps it's the lumber that's the cost increase. But the real question is, or maybe it's just that people are worried and they aren't buying existing homes and they aren't buying new homes because despite the market booming, stock market, because despite the fact that we have the lowest unemployment, there's a certain amount of insecurity in the land about the way things in America are going. It's a huge commitment to take on a home purchase, and that memories are not that short. They remember 10, 11 years ago when you had to have a home, and then, bingo, the bottom fell out. So I think it's a combination of all of those things. Well, I just, you know, we're going to have two PR opportunities today where Washington spins what it wants to spin. The first is a meeting with the European head of the European Commission about trade. Now, we all have learned in the last 6 months on the subject of trade that it's all just a lot of words. We have to look and see what the actions are, and as I noted in today's column at terrysavage.com, the impact is not always where you expect it to be, but we'll be getting a lot of PR about, oh, we're going to make deals, and it's going to be better. And the second thing is, when we do have a problem tomorrow, as the president goes to downstate Illinois and talks about steel but not about corn and soybeans, you're likely to see another PR thing, that we're going to support farm prices because we don't want farmers to be hurt because we put tariffs on China so they retaliate.
We're actually going to talk to the soybean growers tomorrow about that.
Well, marvelous. So what I'm saying is you're going to use American taxpayers' money to solve Washington's mistake,
right? So
to make up to the farmers. Well, it's a very sympathetic group. Well, we all love farmers.
Exactly. So wait a minute. So
there are state
So we've imposed these tariffs, and we're getting retaliatory tariffs. And I think the president's right that China is targeting soybean farmers or farmers because
it hurts them.
Exactly. No, don't misunderstand me. It's strategic. They're doing it, and so they're suffering, and so the government is going to have taxpayers give farmers an extra $12 billion. $12 billion that they don't even... Wait, they don't even want it. They just want to go back to the prices.
They want to farm and sell their crops on a price that is determined globally in the free markets. Full disclosure, you know, I'm on the board of CME Group, and we, of course, have the agricultural markets from the Chicago Board of Trade. We compete with soybeans in Brazil and crops from around the world. And why are we messing up what was a great thing? We had a growing economy, low unemployment. Tax cuts were spurring businesses either to pay themselves bonuses or to expand. Either way, it grew the economy. And why would you throw a monkey wrench in the works?
Terry
Savage. I said this from the day it was announced. And now, you said to me, we haven't felt it yet. We're starting to feel it. And this is only the beginning.
You need to go
and
start. Camp is going to be over soon. You need to go to the kitchen, start making your peanut butter.
I'm going to come down before.
I want some treats. I want there to be some nice, freshly baked cookies when the girls get home.
Oh, God. Thank you. Apple juice will do.
You can go buy them. You can buy freshly baked cookies. You don't have to make them yourself. We'll talk. Terry, we'll see you next week.
See you next week. I'll be there just so you can't tease me. I'll be in studio.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on this Wednesday afternoon. You know, we talk a lot on this program about apartment construction. I think probably we've talked with Frank about that as well, about construction downtown, a lot of luxury apartments going up. But it looks like maybe it is the blue-collar apartments that are needed around the country. We'll talk with Elise Glink about that a little bit later in the program. Right now, time to say hello to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. How are you?
Good. You know, and I'm sure we've talked about this. It comes up on the show a lot, the really transformative period we're in when it comes to cars in this country. You know, I want to talk about that Car2Go program, which is starting today. And Greg Hines has a piece. Well, we'll start with, paying for infrastructure. Greg has a piece about the possibility of a 15-cent a gallon gas increase, a federal gas increase tax, in order to pay for infrastructure. Dan Lipinski, a Democrat on the Transportation Committee, says that could mean $1 billion for programs in Illinois. But, of course, that means we'll be paying more for every gallon of gas as well.
Yeah, and what makes this, a little more interesting in terms of the process than usual is that a Republican is introducing this bill. Representative Bill Schuster of Pennsylvania, chairman of the House Transportation Committee, is putting this forward. So that means, in a Republican-controlled House, that it would have more of a chance of passing.
And the key, I think, isn't that Schuster's a Republican. It's that he's a retiring Republican, right? I mean,
that's right. It's not facing re-election, so they're going to try to push it in the lame duck session.
It's always easy to do the tough things when you're
Lipinski
not running.
Lipinski says that's a stretch.
Yeah, Lipinski doesn't think it can get done?
He doesn't think it can get done in the lame duck session.
All right, so we'll follow that. But then there's also theory that if Schuster goes for it now, that he might just sort of be paving the way for something down the road, make it easier for Democrats. Or explain that for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that the, thought that Hines has is that there's a marker now for reauthorization of the current year's authorization bill. So this kind of helps pave the way, for reauthorization down the road.
One of the things they're looking at, and I don't know if there's any tax right now on bicycle tires, but they're looking at a 10% tax on bike tires to help pay for transportation.
Yeah, and so if you've seen in Oregon, there have been some taxes on bicycles, on sales of bicycles, not just tires, that have funded transportation initiatives. So I think that this is kind of the states are the incubators of these ideas. Yeah. So this is kind of at the federal level how this might play out.
And it makes some sense. I mean, we need to find different ways to do it. And we need to, I think, emphasize bike riding, but maybe they need to pay for it too. I think you brought up Oregon. I think it was Oregon where they have done this mileage tax, where they don't charge you on the gallons of gas you use, but rather on the miles you drive. And the reason for that is because it's great. We're using more and more fuel-efficient cars, which means that we're buying fewer and fewer gallons of gas, but it doesn't really reflect the wear and tear on the road. The miles we drive do, so maybe we should figure out a way to tax miles rather than gas.
Yeah, it's been an unintended consequence of fuel economy gains that you then have a shortfall in gas tax revenue to actually build the road. So that was one innovative, some would say maybe tricky way to make sure that we still get those revenues in.
I do think they're doing it somewhere. Are you aware of, is it Oregon or Washington State? I remember years ago.
I believe it's Oregon as well, yeah.
Of course, the problem is then you're putting transponders in cars and people are concerned about being tracked by the government and all of that. So I just have to think we're accept the fact that we're being tracked anyway. Just let's put that out of our mind. Okay, new ride-sharing program coming with General Motors car owners. And this is what I'm talking earlier about, how they reflect the change in car ownership and the transformation we're under. So if I own a new GM car, I can now put it up for rent, and GM will help me rent the car?
Yeah, so it's a beta testing of a peer-to-peer car-sharing service. So any GM owner, Chevy, Buick, GMC, Cadillac, that has a car that's newer than 2014, so 2015 and beyond, can click a list your car button on a site called maven.com, and then a technician will actually visit your house and install keyless entry, conduct a quick inspection that may take 4 to 6 hours. So I don't know, that's not super quick.
Right.
And once your car is activated, you can use that site or an app to schedule when you're using the car and when it's available. And when it is available, then somebody can sign up and rent it for a few hours.
And so, Frank, explain this to me, because I think I've seen this before where, I don't know if it was with Ford or what, but you would have to have been another Ford owner to rent someone else's Ford. I might be wrong about that, but can anyone rent a General Motors car, or do you have to be sort of in a GM club to get it done?
Yeah, I think that it is open to anybody who is on that Maven site, but the rental, like to rent your car out, you have to be a GM owner. But I think to rent a GM car, I don't think you have to be a GM owner.
And this is all part of General Motors realizing that it won't be too long before people aren't buying cars the way they used to buy cars, and they're trying to figure out a different way to stay in the car business.
Absolutely. And the rates on this seem, you know, fairly reasonable, $8 to $10 an hour. So if you've got to, say, get some stuff from IKEA and need to rent a GMC that's got a little bigger trunk than yours, you know, could come in handy.
All right. Tell me about Car2Go. I don't know if today's the first day, but they are now in Chicago. And it's like a Zipcar, but maybe better because you can leave it wherever you want.
Yeah, so the City Council has approved the pilot program for Car2Go. It's a German company, and it's going to have 500 cars in Chicago starting today. It's a one-way twist to Zipcar. So like you say, there's a tracking app, so you can drop the car anywhere. You don't have to return it back to where you rented it from. And so it's kind of like a Divvy bike, but with an internal combustion engine.
And even better than a Divvy, because a Divvy you still have to return to a dock somewhere. Here you can just leave it out in front of your house, right? And the Car2Go people will pick it up during the night and put it back to where it needs to go.
That's right. Or, you know, I'm thinking about some creative, like, could I drive down the stairs to the Riverwalk, you know, something like that.
Right. Make it sort of a scavenger hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Read more about this and more at chicagobusiness.com. All right, enjoy the summer day. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. It's safe to say at this point, automation is the way of the future, but there are so many aspects of everyday industries that haven't seen the innovation yet. However, risk and compliance is keeping up with the times. Chicago-based LogicGate just received a $7.5 million Series A round funding. They're helping financial services, healthcare, and retail companies automate regulatory compliance, risk management, and GDPR compliance. Psh, what's all that mumbo-jumbo? Jimbo mean?
Okay, well, this is huge for emerging businesses because compliance analysts can be expensive, and the software helps streamline the whole process. It was built to avoid future hiccups in businesses, but the town of Lincolnshire experienced their own hiccup recently at the planned 450,000-square-foot athletic center to be called the St. James. A three-story Top Golf was proposed for the site, but that portion of the plan has been cut out due to the residents of the town disliking it. Maybe it's just a matter of time. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
John Williams, not too far away. He'll be in at 1 o'clock. Steve Bertrand here until then. All right, on a phone line now is Elise Glink. Elise, of course, the publisher of ThinkGlink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves. Have you checked out Best Money Moves yet? You should. It's an employee app for businesses that helps the workers sort of get a handle on their financial stress, to understand it, and then figure out ways to deal with it. And of course, I like to go to thinklink.com to figure out what I'm thinking about, which is what I did today. Well, welcome back to the show, Elise.
Nice to be here, Steve. Thank you.
So there's this piece on thinklink.com about rentals and rental markets and about maybe the ideas that developers should be building more affordable rental units than luxury units. But the statistic from the story that just absolutely jumps out at me is that if you're making the federal minimum wage, now it's higher here in Illinois, but if you're making the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, you cannot afford a two-bedroom rental anywhere in the country working a 40-hour work week. So renting an apartment is out of reach for you if you need more than one bedroom. I had no idea it was that. I didn't know the disparity was that great. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's really sort of a stunning number. When you look at some of the housing reports, and this came out of the State of the Nation's Housing, and you realize how hard people are working just to make ends meet, even in an era where we have almost historic low unemployment, it's really troubling that affordable housing isn't really affordable.
And what's the cause of it, or what's the situation? I mean, you should be able to afford an apartment if you've got a full-time job.
It should be, but at $7.25 an hour, or frankly, even $8.25 an hour, you can't. And the reason is that that wage has stayed the same for a really long time. And it's one of the reasons that if you look at the average, sort of the median salary in the U.S. for a family of four, why it's still less than about $60,000 a year, and it really hasn't moved at all. And in fact, it's contracted if you factor in inflation over the last 20, 25 years. So that just, everything else, though, has gone up in price. You know, we look at housing costs, they've gone up for rentals and for to buy a house. Car prices have gone up, food prices have gone up, and yet minimum wage really hasn't changed much at all. So it's difficult.
I think in a way you're describing, I want you to explain this next sentence for me, but maybe you just did. The cost burden share of renters doubled from 23.8% in the 1960s to 47.5% in 2016. Explain that for me.
Sure. So it's the truth is that when you look at what people earn, the cost burden share, meaning people who are trying to rent but who are just burdened down by how much it costs to rent, right, has almost doubled in the last, whatever that is, 50 years from the 60s till today. I hate to say that because that's like when I was born was in the 60s, but it's just it's a tremendous problem. And this is why it goes back to what the Fed has been saying. The Federal Reserve came out with some numbers earlier this year confirming that 40% of Americans don't even have $400 cash in a savings account.
Okay.
And that's the other side of this.
Another thing in this, you know, perspectives change as you get older and younger and where you are in your life. But when I was younger, I kind of thought that the people making minimum wage were the kids. Kids started minimum wage and then everyone else was making, they might not have been getting rich, but they were all making more than minimum wage. And it seems to me now that the number of workers in this country making minimum wage has greatly expanded, that you're sort of starting at the lowest point and then moving your way up, whereas you might have started higher 40 or 50 years ago. Am I correct in that or am I not correct?
Well, I think that you're generally correct, but let me just put it in some different terms. Let's say you made $10 an hour and you do a 40-hour week. you're only earning $400 a week, or roughly $21,000 a year. That's $10 an hour, which is a lot higher than the minimum wage. It's
right.
higher than what we have in Chicago and in the state of Illinois. But that's only $400 a week, and, you know, generally that amount of money doesn't often come with benefits like health insurance, a 401k contribution, or anything else. And so on top of that, you have all of these other out-of-pocket expenses. It's very hard to raise a family of four on $10 an hour.
That's Elise Glink. Elise, I'm running late. I'm sorry, I've got to end it there. We'll join you again next week, okay?
Sounds good.
Thanks, sorry, Steve. About that.